Today's date is April 21st, 2024. And we're studying page XX, the I have on here I. We believe and so suggested to and including paragraph page XXIX on the other hand. And Lisa P will be our reader today, and we'll be followed by a 20-minute share by Hannah B. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Darcy. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholics must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. If any feel that as psychiatrists directing a hospital for alcoholics, we appear somewhat sentimental, let them stand with us a while on the firing line, see the tragedies, the despairing wives, the little children. Let the solving of these problems become a part of their daily work and even of their sleeping moments. And the most cynical will not wonder that we have accepted and encouraged this movement. We feel after many years of experience that we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement now growing up among them. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for reading. And Hannah B., you're up. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Hannah B., compulsive overeater. So grateful to be here with you all. And thank you for having me. I love this meeting, first of all. This is one of the really, truly safe spaces for me. And I appreciate all of you guys for holding this space every week. It's helped my recovery a lot. I would like to really sort of just jump straight into this reading and into solution because, and I'll qualify along the way, hopefully, you know, this program and the essence of this program is it really isn't about me. It's not really about like my story, right? I mean, my story is about my story for me. And I can, you know, use that to be, to connect with you, but it's like, I don't like really staying in the war zone with it because I don't know. It's kind of boring. It's like, we all have a story, right? And it's actually the thing also that enables me to like look down and see 180 people on this meeting and go, oh, I'm okay. Like I can, I can talk to you guys. And that's a miracle also. That's a miracle that I can do this, that I can look at you and share, and that I have been able to transform, or these fears have been transformed for me, and I can show up with love, you know? And that's an incredible gift of this program. And so it says, it starts off talking about the allergy, you know, and I'm just wired differently physically, you know, and it's like, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I grew up in this war zone, right? I am, you know, the child, I'm the little child that was a victim of this disease and suffered the horrendous consequences of this. And that conditioning, right? That, and those messages, those dysfunctional things, and that get pressed into your consciousness as a child, right? That caused me to disassociate. However, those things did not create the allergy in me. And so I came, or I have come to understand that that's for me, when people say, you know, these things are not why I'm a compulsive overeater. This is not what made me a compulsive overeater. You know, this is not why I have an allergy of the body, because there's plenty of people that can go through the same thing and much, much, much worse, like much more traumatic experiences, right? And they're not addicts. They might have a completely different experience to that, you know? And so, you know, when I first discovered a certain combination of foods when I was about 7 and a half, prior to that, I had image obsession, right? And I had these ideas that if I was a certain way on the outside, that you would accept and love me and I would be whole. But when I first discovered, and really remember anyways, a sense of ease and comfort, the sense of ease and comfort that came with food, it was like this, you know, epiphany. I was like, whoa, if I do this and combine this and do it this way, then wow, like I am illuminated. I am all the things I seek right now today in the spiritual experience that I get as a result of the transformation and the psychic change, if I am diligent and I, you know, utilize the tools, which is a daily thing. But this was so profound to me that I was like, oh, I could exhale. And I was like, thank God, there's a safe space. I'm not alone. There's warmth. There's security here. and that just became a solution for me. And, you know, I'm grateful for that solution because it was how I survived. And of course, it manifested and it progressed in different ways. And my disease took me into multiple other rooms in this fellowship. Aside from, you know, food, it manifested in other ways. And so very quickly, you know, my reliance upon things human really just didn't work, although I really chased that delusion and that illusion. And I kept sort of beating, you know, like my head against a wall with it, or hitting myself on the head like with a hammer, you know, thinking that it would be different this time, that it would be different this time. And I had a lot of research I had to do for a really long time. And it says frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And like, I think of frothy as like the excitement, like the froth, like if you whip something up, you know what I mean? Or like on top of a beer. I'm in the beverage program and like alcohol doesn't sound good to me, but the froth sounds exciting actually. And food is frothy. Like I'm going for impact, like maximum effect, right? Because that's how I'm wired. I'm wired to extremes and I need an effect. And I need it to like have that depth and weight, right? But it didn't quite reach that place in me because the things that I was using were things on the outside. And the thing that was needing to be reached in me was deep at my center and deep at my core. And it didn't matter like how much I ate or how much I restricted or how much I got to like what I thought was my goal weight. It was never enough. You know, when I was at my very, very lowest and my parents sent me to therapy, to this eating disorder specialist, because they were very, very concerned at how frail I was. I didn't think I was, because then I had this body dysmorphia and I was still dissatisfied with the way that I looked, and I still didn't feel okay, you know? So it was this, like, the finish line with this disease just kept getting moved. It was like I could get to where I thought I wanted to be, and then it was like, oh, it's over here, you know? And I was, it's like in Bill's story where he's like constantly dissatisfied, right? And it's like, oh, then this law was not for him. Oh, and then this, you know, it was like just one thing after another. And it never had the depth and weight that was required for me. You know, and like, you know, even like, you know, even things that are good and healthy for me, right? Like I love yoga. I have a yoga practice. And I can have like a really powerful experience doing that. I can like stretch, and I can, you know, have these releases in my body that my body, like this energy that my body's holding, and it's incredibly restorative for me. But I could do yoga all day long every day, and that's not going to spell, you know, that's not going to spell the vital change that I need in order to recover. Even my faith that I love, that I practice, right? That I've always believed, that I've always been inspired by, was not enough for me, you know? And it was like, I needed this tailor-made program that's designed specifically, that speaks specifically to the problem. And words are really important, you know, like the language and the words and the message, because those things have a specific resonance that they can like land with and vibrate in me. And if those things are landing correctly, it's like everything's matching up, then there's this incredible formula. And that's what this is. I don't think there's anything better than this program for us, for compulsive overeaters. I just haven't found anything better, you know. And I am a healing practitioner. I have done a lot of research with this. I've had really profound experiences with different practices and different modalities, and I love them, and they've deepened my experience immensely. But they have not spelt vital necessary change for me to recover. Like, it doesn't matter how incredible those experiences are and shifts are, you know, if I don't have this and I'm not addressing this problem specifically, then I don't stay abstinent. And that was my experience. Like, I just didn't stay abstinent despite all the epiphanies and the ahas, you know? And, you know, it's like my ideals must be grounded in a power greater than myself if I am to recreate my life. And this is a promise, you know, that I can recreate my life. And I really believe that when, you know, we get recovered and we make this conscious contact with a higher power of our own understanding, that we become co-creators with this power, you know, and we get our agency back in, you know, in our recovery, right? Like, I didn't, you know,
Anna, that's 10 minutes.
Thank you. I didn't, like, you know, in the promises, when we read the promises earlier, it talks about we recoil, you know, if tempted, we recoil as if it were a hot flame. I was, you know, I can handle my alcoholic foods. I have 6 children, so I make like a lot of food for people all day long. And I spent my life in the kitchen, like licking knives and, you know, eating leftovers and eating off like 6 different people's plates. And I can handle those foods now, and I can do it with neutrality. And even if I am tempted and I'm like, oh, wow, I used to eat that. Oh, even if there's like a pang of something, it's like I'm very quickly restored. And there's a power there that's not like, it's not me, you know, but it is something that's living in me as a result of the continued action that's required of me pretty diligently in order to stay in that place. And I do need that, you know. And it's like, I'm not somebody that can handle the negative buildup of emotions. I've never been able to. I experience life very intensely. As a kid, I was highly sensitive and everything was very intense, you know. And part of my like process and recovery process is learning how to, and this, I'll have a year at the end of this month, which is the first time ever in my life that I've had a year abstinent, like from everything, you guys. Okay. And what happened was when I got abstinent, And I really got present. The things that surfaced, any unclosed loop, and this is what my recovery has looked like, is any unclosed loop that's not healed for me is going to show up. It's going to keep showing up until I heal it and close it and I'm able to address it. In the past, I had always disassociated. I'd been doing it with food. I was like very delusional. I was in this other program, working this program really diligently, sponsoring people, saying I was a recovered bulimic, okay? And because I wasn't purging anymore, I thought I was recovered. And I had no idea. I was completely delusional that I was actually still living in the food and disassociating with it, just completely blind to it. Like actually thought that I didn't belong in this room and I prejudiced you guys and everything about OA. And I hadn't even been to one. I hadn't even been to a meeting and I prejudiced it for 17 years. It's unbelievable to me, like the blindness and the ignorance there. And so, you know, where it talks here about the cycle, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect. So I needed that effect. And even though I could admit it caused me injury, it was like, this was just normal. This was my delusion. And this was just how I coped. And I was just the river of denial was just very deep, you know, and I was restless, irritable, and discontent until I could again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which came at once by taking a few bites. And it was like I could get 2 weeks what I thought was abstinent, right? Where I wasn't binging or I might have been restricting and I might have been substituting and doing all the things that I did, but where I wasn't in full binge, right? And I was restless, irritable, discontent. So again, I picked up because I'm wired to need a way out. Like, I don't know how to do this. I can't handle, I can't do like my mom is in Al-Anon, or she should be. And she can just handle, she just has this incredible ability to just suppress. And like, she doesn't have to do anything really, it seems like, to find a way out. There's this negative buildup of emotions that maybe doesn't manifest or come out so great, but she can sort of just tolerate this. And this is always mind-blowing to me, you know. She could still do life very moderately, but I have to find a way out. So if I don't find a way out that has the depth and weight that I need, right, to reach that place in me that's really in need, that's not a tangible need, it's a spiritual need, then I will find myself a way out. And it will be the counterfeit. It will be the pseudo counterfeit spiritual experience, right? But I need, like I said, I need maximum impact. So I will, like, it will continue to up itself. And that's the nature of this disease for me and like how it progresses, you know, is the solutions have to, if that doesn't work, then it has to get bigger, then it has to get bigger. And therefore more destructive, you know? and again, like once I've succumbed to the desire, right? So once, you know, I'm in this state of untreated addiction, of restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness, and I pick up, right, because of the strange mental twist that I'm powerless over the obsession of the mind, then, and like, I suddenly think like, it's a good idea, or I don't think at all. And I just pick up, which is most of my experience was I would walk into a meeting, and in AA meetings, they have all kinds of junk food. And I would walk in, I'd be like, I'm not going to eat the cookies. I'm not going to eat the cookies. And suddenly I'd be standing there and I'd be like a beaver, like with the cookies and like chewing the chocolate chips out and throwing the cookie away, thinking that that was okay. And like 8 cookies in, trying to make this look normal in front of my other fellows, you know?
Anna, that's 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. I emerge remorseful with a firm resolution not to do it again. And this is repeated over and over again. This insanely demoralizing cycle is repeated over and over again unless I can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of my recovery. And so this is like this twofold promise to me where if I don't experience this entire psychic change, I am doomed. And if I do, if I have this psychic change, which is a soul change, right? This inner rearrangement that the book talks about, then I can recover. And where I did seem doomed, right, I'm suddenly able to easily control. And it's, of course, it's not control, right? This is God's power. Like, this is where, this is the miracle. It really is a miracle because this disease is no joke. And for me, just real quick, like, my recovery has required me, and the lesson for me this time has been, because I'm also, you know, in recovery from codependency, has been to show up unapologetically for my recovery, you know, and that might look like disappointing a sponsor if that means I have to let that sponsor go because it's not helpful for my recovery. It might look like disappointing family members because, you know, I'm not just chilling out and eating the way they think I should eat. It might look like disappointing and annoying the waiter because I have questions. And these are the things that have challenged me in the past that were these impediments. But it's like my recovery has to come first, you know, and all aspects of my disease have to be addressed. And so these different things are, or manifestations of my disease, codependency, for example, is very linked, you know, and it's like, I can't leave any part of this unaddressed, you know, and that's like the intensity of this for me and like what we're called to, I think. And so my time is probably up. But I thank you guys, and I'm grateful to be of service, and I'll pass.